Okay, good morning, everybody. Whose sound is that? Are we recording? Thank you. This is the meeting of the Framework of Interpretation Working Group here in ICANN London. While we don't have any online participants in the Adobe Connect room, I think for the record, since we have a number of observers in the room, can we go around the table and give our name and affiliation for the record, starting with Martin?
MartinBoyle.uk.
Kim Davies, ICANN.
Daniel Kalchev, register.bg.
Jörg Schweiger.de.
BeckyBird.us.
Bernard Turcotte, staff.
And I should have used my own name, I guess, KeithDavidson.nz.
NigelRoberts.gg. Patricio Poblete, Nick Chile.
Christina Nordstrom, CCNSO.
Gabrielle Laschetek, CCNSO.
StephenDeerhake.as.
And if there's anyone behind me who would like their name recorded in the records, please come forward.
EricGriarte.pe.
Carlos Liuzzi, Nick Argentina.ar.
DBMonaghan.nz.
JacquelineMorris.tt.
Ron Sherwood.vi.
And just joining us through the door, Dottie Sparks de Blanc from US or .vi, and Eberhard Lisa from Namibia.na.
.na,
for the record. Thank you. And there is somebody in the Adobe room. Came and went. Okay, we have some apologies. Christina or Gabby?
We have apologies from Cheryl Langdon Orr, Jap Ackerhuis, Paulus Nurenda, and Bill Semek.
Thank you. Any further apologies? Eberhard?
Yes, Nigel Roberts said if he's late, he has overslept.
Instead of what you did.
Thank you for that. I see there's a microphone on, Stephen. Thank you. So that's present and apologies dealt with. Approval of the agenda, or approval of the agenda, as I mistyped in my agenda. Any additional items, any changes? Everybody's happy? Thank you. Approval of the meeting reports. Bernie has circulated meeting reports for the 27th of March, 22nd of May, 27th of May, and the 5th of June. And I've had a look through all but one of them and trust the eyes of others, but are there any issues arising from those meeting reports that aren't otherwise going to be covered today? Not? We'll consider all those four meeting reports agreed. And now move on to discussion on the final report. Bernie, I think we've got two items outstanding. Do you want to take us through in the time-honoured tradition? And yes, Eberhard.
Can we please send for housekeeping? Bring us a hammer and some nails so we can nail his shut today, please.
Yeah. Is there any disagreement with the sentiment? Can we bar the doors? Nobody leaves until we agree. I hope this isn't too hard. I hope we can get through things reasonably quickly. But Bernie, can we? Can you step us through?
Yes, sir. Thank you. As usual, we'll skip the introduction. We refer to it later, anyways. Unfortunately, Bill's not here. In the introduction, I've gone through and replaced policy statements, period, with policy statements and guidelines as requested. So I think we're good there. I'm actually running on another. I'm running on a clean copy right here, so okay. I'm actually not trying to scroll up there.
So we can't see the text.
I can run from the Adobe room if you want me to. That'll make it simpler for everyone.
Yes, please. Well, with observers in the room, I think we owe it to them to show them what we're talking about.
Okay, I will just find Christina's address so I can... Okay. Oh, come on, please. Yeah, I think you better send it. I'm just, for some reason, not finding it.
And it was the message that went out on the 25th of June at 9:25 p.m.
Did you send it, Christine?
Hasn't turned up yet.
Yeah, if it's going through the list, it takes a few minutes. On time. So I've muted my speaker and my microphone, and we should be good. So that's not the right version. That's the June 3rd version. I believe we're trying to work from the June 23rd version, which Keith sent out and I sent out earlier. Version 1.3. Want me to resend it to you? Okay.
Apologies all for this slight technical delay.
Christina. Okay.
Gosh, that's an unusual agenda for our meeting.
Hey, Desiree.
And for the record, Desiree Milosevic has joined us.
Excellent. All right, I've got the right version of the document, and it's 4:29. It's 9:29, so we're just about perfectly on time.
Okay, take it away, Benny.
Thank you. All right, now, where was I? So, in the introduction, I've replaced the policy statements with policy and guidelines as per my promise to Bill, and this will be reviewed with Becky. There's a few places it's actually tricky whether it should be policy and guidelines or we're just referring to RRC 1591. I didn't take a chance. I've put it in everywhere, but we'll go through it together and make sure it's okay. Now, moving on to the interpretations. 1, 2, 3 were good last time. 4, nothing to show. 5.1, ah yes. So these were the adjustments from SIP. Basically, I lifted the text from the meeting transcript, as seemed like everyone was happy with Martin's suggestions. And it now reads, the FOI working group interprets the requirements for approval from significantly interested parties, Section 3.4, RRC 1591, to require applicants to provide documentation of support by stakeholders and for the IANA operator to evaluate and document this input for delegations and transfers.
Can you blow it up a bit bigger so we can read it?
Yes, sir, I can make that bigger.
Okay, there we go. Any issues, any questions, any comments, any... Is everybody happy? Going once, going twice? Agreed text, Daniel.
Okay, I have a practical question here, on the practical sense. If the applicant is not aware of this opinion of significant interested parties, how are they supposed to be required to provide this documentation?
If the applicant is unaware of it?
Yes.
Okay, it's part of the process that's described by IANA, and IANA will be adjusting its processes. Probably Kim can talk more to that. But people don't wake up just one morning and say, I'm going to ask for a CCTLD transfer or something. There is actually a full document on the IANA site that describes all the steps.
No, this is not the incident about requesting change or whatever.
Right.
The text, as I read it, requires the applicants to provide this documentation.
Yes.
So the applicant must know somehow the opinion of every possible significantly interested parties, even if we did not list them specifically, so that they can check. They have everybody's opinion. So probably here it should be not the applicant to require this, but somehow IANA to find a way to get
I get your question. Okay. You want me to do it?
Yes, please.
Okay. I mean, the whole point of defining significantly interested parties was to do a generic definition so people in each jurisdiction could apply it so that it meets the tests that were defined by Becky. So there is no way for us here to define specifically in each jurisdiction, significantly interested parties, and I don't think there's any way for IANA to do that. The point is, we've said there's only two that will always be there. There's the government, and there's the incumbent manager. Those are significantly interested parties. Those are the two that are named, and you can't go around that. The other ones, we've described the specific tests for what you meet. So how this actually gets turned into an implementation process is going to be one of the jobs that our friends over there are going to take care of.
Okay, so the way we interpret this point is that the applicant is required to provide some documentation of support from some of the significant interested parties they know about, because otherwise it's not possible to comply with that.
Well, I think
so. As long as the applicant provides documentation of support from significantly interested parties, but not from all of them, because they could not know everybody, this requirement is satisfied.
That's correct. I think you're reading it exactly as written. That's the exact interpretation. So I think that's clear. But Kim, just to be sure.
Yeah, I mean, just for your background more than anything, apart from changing terminology and so forth, I don't think this significantly alters the way we're doing things today. Today we ask for letters of support, and with the letters we ask applicants to explain why they feel the sum of those letters is sufficient. So that's where they make the case that it's locally appropriate that the endorsements that they've provided are reflective of, you know, community interest. One other point I would note is that we committed last year that we're going to publicly announce pending requests in some fashion, and that would provide an additional opportunity for someone that feels they're significantly interested to put on the record any concerns or support that they have prior to a decision being made.
That seems to satisfy, or more than satisfy, the criteria that the FOI is setting, so that's really quite useful. I'm not really wanting to go into any discussion on the implementation at this stage, so do you want to discuss? And could I remind all speakers, especially first time round, to say their name?
Yeah, this is Nigel Roberts. This is just a minor thing. It says including the incumbent manager. That should say including the incumbent manager, brackets, for transfers, bracket.
Okay.
Any? I think that's just a tidy up. So it's. Yep, lovely. But so I don't think that needs another round of consultation. Is everybody happy then? Can we put this piece of text to bed? Thank you very much. We've nailed chat number one issue. Bernie, what's next?
Thank you, sir. Essentially, you get the same thing in 6.1 and 6.2, which were the other points we did. So we'll read them just to put them to bed. 6.1, the FOI working group interprets the requirement for interested parties to have some voice, Section 3.4 RFC 1591, to require applicants to provide documentation of support by stakeholders and for the IANA operator to evaluate and document this input for delegations.
Okay, any questions? Any problems with the new wording? Everybody happy? Nobody's online looking for the floor. Nobody in the room. Everybody's happy. Excellent. Thank you very much. And on to 6.2.
The FOI working group interprets the requirements for concerned or affected parties in transfers to communicate with the IANA operator, Section 3.6 of RFC 1591, to require applicants to provide documentation of support by stakeholders and for the IANA operator to evaluate and document this input for transfers.
Again, Daniel.
Okay, it's again the same kind of issue, I see. It's probably just the wording of it, but it's maybe deeper. The way we interpret this is that we make the applicant the single point of contact or the channel through which communication between IANA and the interested parties has to flow. And this in some way, but read the text. You require the applicant to provide this
documentation.
Documentation. So why then require the applicant do this? I mean, for example, you are the applicant. You identify some interested parties. You get some documentation from them, submit it to IANA, and it so happens that those interested parties submit some other kind of feedback to IANA. What then?
That's good.
No.
Why? I don't understand the issue. The issue is to elucidate, to gather from the local community whether or not they agree with the delegation underway. If there's disagreement, if people at this point choose to provide some documentation suggesting that that this shouldn't be dealt with, then IANA has to balance that. So I'm not.
No. My point is not about agreement or disagreement by the community. My point is that we require the applicant to be the channel of communication.
No. That's what we were saying on the earlier point, that the applicant gathers the documentation that they feel supports it, but if other people, other parties want to support it, they can, through Kim's mechanism, can make their own message of support as well. It doesn't have to come from the applicant. Thank you, Nigel.
All right, let me try this. Reading this documents what the applicant must do in order to have more than a random chance of being successful in its application. If it doesn't do this, it's unlikely to be successful in its application. It does not require anything of any other party. It simply says this is what the applicant needs to do. So it's documenting what the applicant must do, but it's not prohibiting any other party from doing anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Nigel, I agree with the spirit of this thing. I just try to read 6.2, for example, and it sounds very strange to me. So it says that the requirement of some parties being able to communicate with the IANA operator is solved by requiring the applicant to provide that communication.
Well, if I can just try this a little. What you're saying is that we are not addressing the issue of additional input in the text. That's correct. But we're restricted. We're not totally restricted, but we are attempting to restrict ourselves to interpreting the words that we see. And the words are that the affected or concerned parties should communicate with the IANA operator. So the affected and parties, including other parties, can communicate with the IANA operator. But in addition, it requires applicants to document their support, otherwise the application falls at the first hurdle. That's how I see this.
Yeah, but the wording is that our working group interprets the possibility of other parties to communicate with IANA to require the applicant to provide the documentation. This is my point.
No, I think the word is missing is the. You're reading the word the in there, and there isn't a word the. Well, you're saying to require applicants to provide the documentation of support. That's not what it reads. It must provide documentation of support, which has a quite different meaning.
I think the other way to look at this, the complete reverse way of looking at this, is we do not want IANA to be delegating unless there is documentation supporting. So if you're happy with that as the base premise, and I think happy with Kim's explanation of what the process will evolve to, then I'm wondering if it's actually a live issue for you. Okay, so we've got clarification. You're happy? You're not happy, Patricio?
No, it's not that I'm unhappy, but the way I see it, there's nothing in what we're saying that forbids anybody to communicate with IANA. What this is saying is that the burden of the proof that there is community support or significantly affected party support is on the applicant.
Yes, correct.
That's what it's saying.
The minimum test.
Exactly.
Okay, I think we're all clear. So are we all now happy? Can we nail this one shut? We're on a roll. Last chance. Okay, agreed text. Thank you. And we have one more, Bernie.
Oh, sorry. Section 8. The FOI interprets the requirements that the manager serve as a trustee. Our issue around here was originally that it was, I believe, administration policies. So Eberhardt, on a second reading, had an issue around that. We looked at various ways of playing with this. I believe from going through the original documents, we had the intent was actually to write registration policies. We then got into a discussion with Martin, what happens relative to what we said in the final reports, but the final reports are not written, so we can actually adjust the final reports. And if we'll remember when we started working on this final report, I made that statement that from the SIP and revocation documents, we have not published the final reports. So the process we had used was to go through this to see if there were any niggling issues that would remain. We could fix them. If we agreed with the text here, I would adjust the text in the final report, which would then be published. So I don't think there's a huge issue. We do meet the test from Martin, I believe, that this is not a major change. It will be in the final report on revocation where this text comes from. And then we've got the change to registration policies, which, according to me, was the intent of what we're trying to, and I think that meets Eberhardt's requirements.
Okay, any discussion? I see Martin first, then Eberhardt.
Yes, I'm Martin Boyle from .uk. Thanks. I'm struggling a little bit because registration policies seems to me to be quite a restrictive area that might be, should be, of concern to significantly interested parties, let alone actually the average registrant. And so I suppose my question is, how do we interpret registration policies? Are we just saying that, you know, these are the rules that allow registrant X to be able to register? Because it would seem to me that things that significantly interested parties are going to be interested in are things like stuff that affects the security and stability of the local country code registry. So essentially what I'm struggling with is understanding why we are being so specific to just tie this down to the immediate interface with the registrant rather than the environment in which the registry is working.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Eberhard, then Nigel.
Eberhard, listen, I had three things. It's not just my objections. There were a few others. The point is, I don't care what we write, but never mind that RFC 1591 give not rise to this interpretation. I cannot have anything that I'm willing to, not necessarily willing to die in the ditch on writing something like this, but we cannot have input into operations. We must find a language, and I think that language to me is acceptable, that we don't have a problem with policy oversight. We do have a problem with ICANN specifying that there is something that can be interpreted locally as input into operations, because they're going to come wave this at us and use it as a leverage. And whether ICANN then sits back on the high perch and says, oh, sorry, we're not, that's beside the point. What we're doing is going to be used locally as well. So if it's clear, we did not say it's operations. We don't need to get too much into detail what we mean, as long as the concerns that we have that it can be used against CCTLD managers, as long as that address, the actual language is not so much important to me. So I can live with this, and I have no objections. I can nail I can hammer the nail on that one.
Thank you, Eberhard. I think yes, we had reasonable agreement that we were uncomfortable with the idea of having operating policies as being way too wide. But let's see if we can't. I think so. If I'm reading it right, Martin's saying he feels registration policies might be a little bit too tight. In fact, but anyway, Nigel.
Okay, actually, I wanted to get in before Eberhard, but never mind, because he said part of what I was going to say, but he said it in a different way that allows me to go on one stage further, so actually it turned out quite well. The thing we're struggling with here is the mandate of this group. The mandate of this group is to construe and interpret existing policy. It is not to bring in new policy under the guise of interpretation. And this is what's called creative interpretation, when a high court judge or somebody stamps up and makes it up as he goes along and says the law was this way all along. And that's what we're doing here. Now, I said I would not object to this wording for a number of reasons. One is I don't think that RFC 1591 can be interpreted to mean anything like this, but I think it's relatively harmless. And if somebody comes and looks at it again in the future and says, well, that's a load of rubbish, we'll just ignore it. But I will not have making up of policy, widening it out, when even this, what you've got written here, is frankly a load of rubbish compared with what RFC 1591 actually says. So I will not object to these words, but if we start widening them out and making anything else, I will disassociate myself from this part of the final report, because it's frankly nonsense.
Okay, so I think Eberhard and Nigel have said they can live with this wording, and Martin probably hasn't said he can live with it, but could you? I mean, would it concern you? Would you know? I mean, could we say we have consensus around, but a slight discomfort with the word registration?
I mean, I understand Martin's position here, because it is rubbish.
Well, I think Nigel's just explained what I think. I didn't know I thought that, but you know, I'm sure he's right. Essentially, I think if I remember correctly, this lot came from the area of the manager having a trustee sort of relationship for looking after the delegation and making sure it was fit for purpose. My concern is that, and I agree that, you know, operational policy is not part of that. It's just I'm concerned that the registration policy restricts what might be a well-run CCTLD, But having said that, it's now on the record, and I'm not going to stand in the way of consensus on this particular text.
Okay, well, I have Nigel, then Becky, then Abahat.
I suspect Becky might be going to say something that I was about to say. I think we've reached the point. I mean, we either say we take it out altogether, or we leave it in as is, and we take the temperature of the room. But I'm intruding on the chairman's privilege here.
Becky. Yes, Becky.
Just quickly, it obviously doesn't prohibit a manager for soliciting advice on more things than registration policy.
Of course. Abahat.
I'm quite sure that we're helping to tell you what you mean in the future. And secondly, why is everybody so hoarse in here?
So... singing last night, perhaps, I don't know. Anyway, okay, so I think we have actually better than consensus. I think we have unanimous agreement that we can actually live with this. So can we agree the text and now move on? And Bernie, we do have another bit, 8.2, is it?
Sorry. That's it for the interpretations. So after that, we're into the recommendations.
Okay.
I'm actually going to read the introduction text because I think we only had one part that was a little bit of concern, and I think we put it away, but I'm just making sure. So the country name supporting organization tasked the framework of interpretation working group with developing and proposing a framework of interpretation for existing IANA policy and guidelines governing the delegation, redelegation, now transfer, of CCTLDs. The FOI working group's goal was to give IANA and should be IANA contractor and the ICANN board clear guidance on the meaning of RFC 1591 in order to clarify existing policy and to facilitate consistent and predictable application of this policy. I cobbled from a few things, but I think it's fairly standard. Okay. In reviewing the FOI working group recommendations, it's important to keep the following context in mind. The FOI working group had no authority to develop or recommend new or changed policy, and the recommendations reflect the limited scope of the FOI working group's charter. To the extent new or changed policy may be appropriate or desirable, it must be developed through a formal policy development process. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. Those are the CCNSO bylaws. The text that we ended up agreeing to last time was recognizing that ultimate authority on public policy for any country, I believe we should change that to country or territory, given the formal language that we usually use, for any country or territory is its government and legislature. Nothing in this working group's report is intended to, or should be taken to, constrain or limit applicable law in respect of matters relating to country code top-level domain names in the country or territory represented by the particular two-letter code or IDN string, or in the state of incorporation place of business of the IANA operator. Now, with the minor change of adding country-territory on the top, that was the text we agreed last time. We're putting it to bed like that. Finally, nothing in the framework of interpretation limits or constrains the applicability of GAC principles, guidelines for delegation and administration of country code top-level domains.
Okay. Any dissent from the text? Are we happy? Is everybody happy? No comments? All right, done. Thank you. More agreed text.
That was it. The rest is agreed text.
So we have a framework of interpretation. Well, congratulations, team. Fantastic. It's just when you thought it. Abahat.
So we put it on record now that there will be no more substantive changes, spelling errors. Not will be typing errors, things will be precluded, and we have an agreed upon text that will be as a draft form forwarded already now to interested parties. Yes, do we need to have now a consultation process? What's the next steps?
Okay, I think firstly, I think Becky and I, as the chair and vice chair, have the editorial prerogative to put in a comma or decide on what colour paper clips we're going to use.
At risk of Nigel's ire.
Yeah, risking upsetting the entire group. But I think we always should have that right to tiny edits, but we will signify those to the group rather than seek approval from the group. Yes. But anything that changes any hint of meaning, we will have to come back to the group. But I think we now have agreement, so we can go forwards with that. In terms of the process, I think that potentially we don't have anything to consult, because this is a summary on top of what has been consulted. So I'm suggesting we put it to the vote of the CCNSO members to approve the framework of interpretation. Does that sound like the process that we should be going through? I see Eberhard looking for the floor.
What does the charter say?
The charter says to develop a framework and deliver it to the CCNSO for approval.
We do that. We deliver it to the CCNSO for approval. We do nothing else. If the council wants to bring it to the membership, that's not our problem. We should not exceed our charter.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, if someone is desperate to have a consultation round with just this summary, we could, but it serves no purpose. It doesn't impact on the actual work that we've done and consulted on. Nigel?
Yeah, I have two things. First of all, I think that's teased out, really. I think we have completed our work. We seem to have a little bit of time left in the meeting room, so we're filling the time. As we've just discussed, I think we deliver the final version to the council, and formal steps are a matter for council, but I'm pretty confident that council will do the right thing, including all formal steps that might be needed. The other thing is, and this is probably something that if we've got a little bit more to do, might better come later on, but as soon as I've got the microphone, I'm going to do it anyway now. I'd like to place on record my tremendous admiration for the work of everybody involved on the organisational side of this. That's chair, vice chair, staff, who've been involved. Without you, we couldn't have. We'd have just been running around like idiots for 6 years. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we should hold our thanks anyway. But I think the working group has been a fantastic experience, and the arduous nature of multi-stakeholderism and finding consensus. Fully supporting. I feel well supported by both the staff and my esteemed colleague and vice chair, and I think the working group members have done their best to achieve consensus at every step. Eberhard.
I want to agree this in my usual manner by saying, now that we have conquered the world, why don't we sort out the IANA transition?
It seems to be a looming task, but I think just in terms of the actual process, I think we make our recommendation of the final report. So this, appended with the chapters that we have concluded, is the final framework. We submit that to the CCNSO Council for their approval via a voting mechanism, if they feel that's necessary, with members. I think we also need to be working closely with the GAC along the way to give them the final document as early as possible, and say, while this is going through its approval process within the CCNSO, we invite them to discuss any arising issues and so on, so that by the time we get to ICANN Los Angeles, there would be their translated copies. They've had a full opportunity to review and to hopefully then approve in Los Angeles, so we together, this CCNSO and the GAC can walk together to the ICANN board with the document for submission to the board. So that's the proposed methodology. And then I think there is a separate stream of work around the implementation that this committee might still, this working group might still be required to pay some attention to. So we're not off the hook yet. Stephen?
Am I correct in assuming that once you guys decide on the font and the point size and the kerning, et cetera, that we will get a complete copy finalized to look at as a group before you submit to council, et cetera?
No, that would be impossible, sorry. Of course.
Yes, to you, but not Nigel.
That works for me.
Yeah, Nigel doesn't need it. Martin will get one.
Okay. Okay, enough frivolity. This is a serious working group. I think in terms of the other agenda items, I should probably put on record the activities that the working groups had here in London. We reported on Tuesday to the ICANN board. We noted strong support from the chair of the ICANN board and our CCNSO members on the board for the framework of interpretation and their comments that they would take forward to the GAC a request to enthuse the GAC to approve and seeing this as a very important aspect in the overarching NTIA transition process. We then went to the GAC. Can I finish my report on note? We reported to the GAC later on Tuesday, and other than our report to the board about us intending to finish the framework here, we also thanked Frank March for his role as the lead on the GAC for the Framework of Interpretation Working Group, because this is Frank's last attendance at an ICANN meeting. And he's no longer the New Zealand government representative. And then we reported, the GAC and the board met, and unfortunately the GAC and board session was dominated by other issues. So Steve Crocker's comments that he would be supporting the framework to the GAC didn't happen in the formal sense, but he is following through in discussions with the GAC chair and senior people. So I think there's a paving of the way that the ICANN board does see the importance of nailing this shut before we get too far down the NTIA transition plan. So, and I think that was it. We didn't report into the CCNSO council meeting because working group reports were left for the next council meeting. There wasn't time on the agenda yesterday. So that's the update of where we are. Eberhard.
I have been speaking with two GAC members, and as we have been discussed this previously, we should all discuss it with our respective GAC representatives. And the ones that I've spoken with have indicated that they was not on their priority, but I'll send them some stuff and they will actually have promised to read the stuff. Then I have taken the deputy under permanent secretary for paperclips of my government to lunch, and it seems there is an indication that peace may be breaking out. He's also standing for vice chair for the GAC. The way I see this is that the Africans could usually come up with a consensus candidate, so that puts us at a good opportunity to bring this to their attention and get their support. I'm actually quite convinced that we will get this, our situation solved in a very acceptable way for all sides.
Well, it's not the purpose of this working group to be interested in any individual case of a delegation. It is pleasing to hear that, at least from my personal perspective, that you're making progress, Eberhard. Well done. With that, just one item I just recalled is that the GAC will be replacing Frank with somebody on this working group, if there's any necessity for this working group to go forward. But certainly the person, there will be someone from the GAC who will lead their processing from here, and it sounds like, but it's not official yet, that it will be Norway, which will be quite good because they've been an active and interested bystander to the process all the way through, and I think they're a relatively useful government to be taking it forward with. Okay. Oh, no such thing as a useful government. I'm sorry. Strike that from the record.
All useful.
Of course. Okay. With that, I don't believe we need any scheduled meetings going forwards, but there may be some ad hoc meetings between now and ICANN Los Angeles. So we will give as much notice as we can and try not to interfere with the Northern Hemisphere summer too much along the way. With that, if there's nothing else, can we conclude our business? I'll declare the meeting closed, and thank you all for your participation and hard work over the last 3 years. Thank you.